you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Rock me on the water, sister.
Jackson Browne, his self-titled album, Rock Me on the Water, is also the title of journalist Ronald Brownstein's brand new book, subtitled 1974, the year Los Angeles transformed movies, music, television, and politics. Ron, so good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Larry, thanks for having me.
So share with us what was going on at this time, not just musically, but in other areas culturally. I guess we should start, though, with music. What's happening at this point in the city?
Yeah, it was an extraordinary moment in LA, because I think it was one of the rare, if not the only moment, when all of the big cultural industries were firing on all cylinders. There have been other periods, there have been great periods for television or movies, and even for music. But in the early 70s, you had simultaneously, literally blocks away from each other, in the music sphere, Joni Mitchell and Jackson Browne and Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles producing career-defining albums all in that same year of 1974. In TV, you had the revolution in TV that was created by Norman Lear and Carol O'Connor and All in the Family and James L. Brooks and Mary Tyler Moore on The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Larry Gelbart and Alan Alda on MASH that made TV more relevant than it had been in the 1960s. And of course, as you know, the late 60s and early 70s is considered, along with the years around World War II, as the other golden age in Hollywood history. And what was so striking about that period, when you had a tremendous outpouring of socially aware movies, is that you had two distinct generations of great directors making a mark. You had the directors born in the 20s and 30s, like Robert Altman and Bob Rafelson and Arthur Penn and Mike Nichols, but you also had the first contributions of the directors born in the 40s, what became known as the movie brats, Spielberg and Lucas and Scorsese and Paul Schrader. And all of this came together at the same time in LA in the early 70s. It was an incredibly creative and fun period, but it was also, I think, a hinge in our cultural and political history.
I have to say, I was going to Hollywood High School at the time in 1974, and you could feel it around you. I'm going to school just down the street from Paramount, where Bob Evans, you know, everything is changing there at the studio. The new Hollywood is establishing itself. The recording studios, just a couple blocks from where I was going to school, tremendous artists going in and out of there. The whole sense of what was kind of going on at that time was very much as you depict in the book. And remember, Motown moved to Hollywood just the year before. We have Marvin Gaye's What's Going On in the social commentary of Motown. Motown music, which changes pretty dramatically upon that record label's arrival from Detroit in Hollywood, Ron. So that's going on too.
Yeah, what's going on is a, you know, titanic album from the early 70s, although Marvin Gaye defiantly stayed out of LA to finish it when Berry Gordy moved out here. And Motown really kept its distance from the scene that was around it. But you're right in the broader sense. I mean, as I went back and I was able to talk to most of the people who were involved in creating this iconic pop culture of the early 1970s, and there was a sense that they were part of something special. Irving Azoff, who was the very pugnacious manager of the Eagles, said to me, he said, "I don't know what it was, you know, but there was something in the water all the way from Hollywood to Malibu, and it was magical." Graham Nash said, "You know, it was this kind of pool where you felt that, you know, anything was possible." And the way in which these industries interacted and drew on each other. You know, I tell the story in the book, a figure that some people in LA may remember, Robert Wood, largely forgotten now. He was the head of KNXT in the early 1960s. He became the president of CBS in 1960. 69. He was a USC football booster, a staunch conservative, a Nixon fan, a Reagan fan. He disliked the student demonstrators, but he was the one who recognized, because of his urban background, that the way TV had responded to the 60s, which was essentially by ignoring it and giving people the Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction when America was going through these tumultuous changes, he knew that had to change. And he was the one who ultimately put All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore and MASH on the air. And at one critical moment, as they are making these decisions, he talks about his fear that they will lose the next generation of viewers to edgier movies like Easy Rider. And really, I think kind of the underlying point of my book is that what you saw in the late 60s and the early 70s was the rising economic power of the baby boom was being felt in culture before it was being felt in politics. And all of these industries had to reconfigure themselves to make themselves relevant to this enormous emerging generation. And that's what really tore down the wall between pop culture and the way society had been changing in the 60s, because both TV and the movies especially had spent the decade of the 60s doing their best to ignore everything happening around them.
We're talking with Ron Brownstein, his book, Rock Me on the Water, 1974, the year Los Angeles transformed movies, music, television, and politics. You bringing up James L. Brooks, creator of the Mary Tyler Moore Show and other friends, reminded me that he'd pay me to water his lawn when he was gone. He lived two doors down from us, so... It was funny that you bring that up. All right, we're going to come back with more conversation on Air Talk as we hear Joni Mitchell, 1974 album, Court and Spark, Free Man in Paris, back in 1 minute. Linda Ronstadt, of course, from her 1974 mega-selling and critically acclaimed Heart Like a Wheel album, You're No Good, hit single from that release. We're talking about 1974, a year in Los Angeles culture, when that culture went out from L.A. across the country and arguably had a global influence. Ron Brownstein writes about it in his new book, Rock Me on the Water, 1974, the year Los Angeles transformed movies, music, television, and politics. Ron, who are some of the people you got to talk with who were able to recapture memories of that era?
Oh, it was really terrific. And I think it really helps bring, you know, my goal in the book was to both bring the era to life and then to think about kind of the deeper meaning of the way the pop culture interacted with political and social change. And there were lots of folks who are still around who wanted to talk. Warren Beatty, Jane Fonda, Angelica Houston, Jackson Brown, Linda Ronstadt, Graham Nash, Irving Azoff, who was the manager of the Eagles, John Boylan and Peter Asher, who were very close to Linda Ronstadt. And then James L. Brooks and Norman Lear and Rob Reiner, Mike Farrell, Linda Bloodworth Thomason, lots of people coming at Sherry Lansing, people coming at it from very different, Robert Towne, who does not talk a lot, talked about the making of Chinatown. As I said, what was one of the things that was striking is that people recognized they were part of something special. I mean, they kind of understood that and particularly in TV and movies, that the reins were being loosened and that they had new freedom that had not been there before. I mean, I mentioned how TV in the 60s, I mean, how they had essentially their operating theory was Walter Cronkite spent half an hour documenting all of the new fissures and strains in American life. And then the network spent the next 3.5 hours trying to erase that from your mind. The studios weren't really that different, Larry, as you'll remember. I mean, there was Bonnie and Clyde and The Graduate in 1967, but most of the 60s were Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music and The Longest Day and The Great Escape and Cleopatra. They weren't getting any closer to what was happening either. And then in this period that I write about, beginning in the late 60s, accelerating in the early 70s, I argue culminating in 1974, you see that wall come down and suddenly you have a burst of socially aware filmmaking, and you have TV really with All in the Family putting the generation gap into a single living room, and Mary Tyler Moore dealing with the changing role of women, and MASH rather incredibly doing a satire of Vietnam and a very thin veil of Korea, even while we were still there. And suddenly you had, I think, a very different kind of message coming out of pop culture that embraced and embodied many of the critiques of American life that emerged from the social movements of the 60s. And I do believe this was the moment when ideas like greater suspicion of authority, greater autonomy for women, changing roles between men and women, more inclusion of marginalized groups. I think this was the moment when they were cemented into the culture, because this was the moment where they were embedded into the popular culture.
Well, and shows like All in the Family, which is a clear critique on bigotry, ends up being, you know, a popular show across all different strata of society, because yeah. That's the genius, of course, of Norman Lear and his writing staff.
Right. You know, I'm glad you noted that, because, you know, if you think about it, in many ways, the Smothers Brothers a few years earlier, Tom and Dick Smothers, was the first attempt by CBS to try to produce something that would seem more connected to what was happening around them in the society. But the Smothers Brothers chose a side, basically. It was, you know, it was accessible to the younger side of the generation gap and very clearly articulated their point of view. And whereas with All in the Family, it's true that their vision was that Archie lost every argument. And that's what they talked about. Ultimately, Archie was always outdueled by whether it was a younger person or a black person or a gay person, but that's not the way everybody watching viewed it. There were many people who watched it because they liked what Archie was saying. And Lear's genius, although it drew him some criticism ultimately at the time, was that he presented this in a way that was accessible to everyone, to kind of both sides of the generational divide. And that's what really allowed it to become a hit of a magnitude that, you know, is almost unimaginable today, the size of the audience that it had five
on a Saturday night. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. Ron, thank you so much. Wonderful book. Really takes those of us who were alive then back to that time. For our listeners who were younger and don't know so much about 1974, except what they've heard in their classroom earlier on, I highly recommend Ron's book to take you back to this time when culture has such an impact on American social views and politics. Rock Me on the Water, 1974, the year Los Angeles transformed movies, music, television, and politics. Ronald Brownstein, senior editor at The Atlantic and senior political analyst for CNN. We leave you, of course, with the Eagles from the 1974 album On the Border. Fresh Air coming up next with Terry Gross, and a look at the Sackler family, which made billions off of OxyContin. Tomorrow, Austin Cross will be guest hosting in my place. Have a wonderful afternoon from all of us at Air Talk.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.